Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2019. Lecture 6, delivered on February 6, 2019. The title of this lecture is Financial Analysis.
Today, financial analysis. Accounting can take us only so far. The numbers the accountants generate are important. You'll see me use them. However, at the end of the day, net income really is not that important to investing or to the survival of a company. I contribute to a message board where we try to help investors learn about stocks and bonds, investing responsibly. And I had pointed out there had been some positive statements about how wonderful Tesla is. And I had pointed out that that is not a good investment, either in a portfolio or definitely not on its own. And some genius who obviously plays stock market games and puts some of his own money in through Robinhood or something like that, he just has a fit. They've had a profit for the last two quarters, so you must be an idiot. Well, I'm sure he's very, very bright. No, he's not. He's an idiot. You see, profit for a couple of quarters really doesn't mean a whole lot. And profit in general doesn't mean a whole lot. In finance, what we care about first and foremost, and pretty much always, is cash flow. I can show you a company that has positive net income, and that company is going to die. I can actually show you companies that have negative net income that are actually quite healthy. Cash flow is what matters. You, sir, are very wealthy. You own a lot of land. You have a really nice house trailer on the south side of Decatur. You have money in the bank. You have money in investments and stocks and bonds, but you don't have any money in your pocket to eat tonight. So that means that you can be a very wealthy person and you can die of starvation. You see, there are many, many people, trust funds, and companies that have considerable wealth, but they are poor as dirt. They can't sustain themselves. They can't keep themselves. And that is why we care about cash flow. Do you have the money to pay your bills? Do you have money to bring to the table to invest in new technologies or store expansions or experimental products? Do you have that money on hand just to run the business? If you don't have that, you're probably either one, irresponsible as hell, or two, something has happened that blindsided you, that has bled your cash down to the point where you are in peril of not being able to make payroll. That's why we have to care very much about the cash flow. Let me show you something. I'm going to pull up Tesla, and I'm going to tell you a couple of things here. And interestingly, this is where I give you a light version of just what I said today to my 242 class, investments. The first thing that you would see about Tesla is that if you call up information on a service like Yahoo, you could actually have numbers that are false, incorrect. The data stream might not be accurate. There might be a number that's stuck at a value that's very old, that's not updating. properly. Things like that can happen. So when you look at the Yahoo Finance numbers for Tesla, that beta is incorrect. Be careful. Amateur sites are fraught with errors. And so we worry about those kinds of sites. But even at that, let's take that one beta, that one, and let's look at this company. First things first on it. Do you notice something interesting, madam, about the EPS? What do you think of that EPS?
It's in the negative.
So what do you think of it?
It's bad.
Bad. Negative, bad. This company has, as of its last report, lost $5.75 per share for its investors, for its equity investors. That's not a good sign right there. This company's just an absolute basket case. It is pathetic. Well, Elon Musk, he's a genius. There's a second problem. A company should not be a person that's running the company. A company should be an entity of its own that shouldn't have a name attached to it. That's bad news to be right there. I'll bring up another company here. Madam, right off the top of your head, can you name me the chief executive officer and the chief financial officer of Target Corporation? Right off the top of your head. Oh, you can. Oh, in other words, those people are behind the scenes. The company is what matters, not one cray-cray man. Okay? That is a sign of strength. When you have gotten past that point where someone matters instead of the body of the shareholders being the relevant thing of interest. So we see right off the bat that this is a company that is in trouble. The next thing that we want to do is, if I look down here just as a quick dirty on the financials, and again, you've got to be careful with this because these might have false numbers in them, but I can see that the net income is reporting as just horribly negative. But that's not even the whole story with this stock. There's more to the story than just the net income. And we're going to look at that here in just a minute. All of these numbers that any service gets are going to flow from filings with the SEC. So if you're looking for the actual primary source, and if you're in a class of mine and you're reporting on anything that is a financial number at all, you are going to cite the SEC document, because if you cite something else, that's a secondary source. And secondary sources are risky for several reasons. But anyway, moving ahead with Tesla here, the first thing that we're going to want to do is go over here, if we want the numbers themselves, from the horse's mouth, we go to SEC.gov. and go to the Edgar Filings tab down to Company Search. And we type in the trading symbol, TSLA. And there's where we get the numbers. Now, this company should be reporting a new 10-K here pretty soon. This is their last one, and their fiscal is ended, so we should be seeing a 10-K. Now, that's a problem with Tesla, because they have screwed up in filings with the SEC. And instead of being contrite and humble and swearing to God that they won't do anything that stupid again, their egotistical, egomaniacal owner goes and tweets about how stupid the SEC is. So you know what the SEC did? They fined him $70 million. And what does he do? He comes back with more tweets about how it was worth it. Now, Okay. So in other words, my ability to rely on the primary source. What's he going to do next? No, I ain't going to file no 10K. Oh, boy, there you go. So I'm worried there that I'm not even getting time, going to get timely information from this company because it's got a defiant asshole running it. And that's a technical term for a defiant person. But let's go to the last 10K and let's have a look here real quick. And I'm going to financial statements. Now. Okay. What we care about is not profit, it's free cash flow. Now, I'm not going to take you terribly deep. There are some issues behind this formula that I'll mention at some point, but we're going to do it the straight up way. What we do for a quick and dirty on free cash flow is we take the accounting numbers and then we fix them. We simply add back, take away from the numbers that are being reported in the financials. Now, in the real world, you would probably want to do a little more tweaking than that, but this is going to give us a good picture. Now, free cash flow, FCS. The first thing is it's going to be revenues minus costs minus the depreciation minus the interest expense, all times 1 minus the company's marginal tax rate. If the company's income statement was done by GAAP, this is actually should be, at least on a first pass, this should be net income, otherwise known as profit, otherwise known profit or loss, otherwise known as earnings. Now, interest, yeah.
What are the I and T again?
I and T. 1 minus the marginal tax rate. In other words, this is after taxes, after interest, after taxes. In other words, everything is paid. What do they have left for the shareholders? Okay? Now, one thing that I'll caution, and this is something that kind of bothers me, you don't have to worry about it here, but we are in a minute, because a lot of financial statements, the income statements these days, they don't separate out the depreciation as its own line on the income statement. It's kind of embedded somewhere, hidden in there. That's not a problem here, but it will be in the next step, because now we've got to fix this net income. The first thing we have to do is add back the depreciation, because that wasn't a real cash outflow. It was a piece of what they spent. It's a piece that is, we calculate it by rules of accounting for depreciation. MACRS, whatever. Straight line, whatever. Reverse sum of years, digits, whatever. So we have to add it back in. So that means that that's a problem for us here, because if it's not listed as its own line in the income statement, then we're going to have to find it somewhere else. Fortunately, we can. Then the next thing we have to do is, once we have gotten rid of the problem with depreciation not being a real cash flow, then what we have to do is we have to take out what actually did happen. The capital expenditure itself. The actual full amount of money that was spent that year. The whole shebang. So in other words, if I spend $20 million on a factory, I can use accounting to show only, let's say, $3 million of it the first year. No, I didn't spend $3 million. I didn't spend this. So I add that back in, and then I say, we spent $20 million. That's what came out of our pocket. That's the real money that came out. So we minus we add back the depreciation. Now you say, well, wait a minute, fat boy. Why didn't you just do it? Why didn't you just leave it out here? Because there's a tax shield effect from the depreciation that is real. So we have to leave that in there and then take it out later. Minus capital expenditures. Okay, then the last thing we have to do is we have to subtract out the change in net working capital. In other words, if inventories go up, well, that's going to hurt us as far as cash flow goes. If our accounts payable goes up, that helps our cash flow. You pay your, okay, anyway. So, and now I'm going to put some numbers to that, and let's look at what really happened to Tesla. We know that by the net income, this company lost $2.241 billion. Now, that in itself should get us a little excited. So, in the case of TSLA, we're going to reconstruct from just the financials. Like I said, there are a few issues. This is quick and dirty. The first thing we're going to do is, okay, the net income, $2.241 billion. That's a lot of money out the door right there. Okay, well, let's add back the depreciation. I do not see that as a separate line here. I don't see it. So what I'm probably going to have to do is run over here. Now, the first place you'll go to get that number is the statement of cash flows. It has to be listed there. So there it is. That was how much was taken out that we didn't see on the income statement. So we're going to have to put that number back in, $1.636 billion. Well, that helps. But then we have to take out what really did happen. Now, if I go to the statement of cash flows, now, there are different things. Usually the one I focus on is this guy right here, purchases of property and equipment. See it right here? That's the capital expenditures that are really important. You could argue some of the other lines are important too, but that's the one I'm going to focus on. A real $3.415 billion went out the door. Went out the door. That's what really went out the door. Not the depreciation that was recognized in the income statement. What really happened. And that is a hell of a lot of money. Now the last part. The last part is the change in net working capital. And here's how you do it. You take the 2 years, the most recent reporting 2 years. Current assets, current liabilities for each of those years. And then that one minus that one will be the net working capital, and then we can get the change in it from there. So we need to go over here to the consolidated balance sheet. Whoops. There's some reason that's... Oh, there we go. I see. Okay. So for Tesla, we would say current assets... For the 2 years, 6.571. Billion current assets 2017 against current assets for 2016, 6.260. And then the current liabilities for 2017, 7.675. Billion against 2016 would be 5.827. Now you get now we can get the net working capital for each of the 2 years. Grabbing a calculator here and hoping that I don't screw up as I usually do, hitting the keys. 6.571 less 7.675. So their net working capital 2017 was negative 1.074 billion. Their current liabilities exceeded their current assets last year by about $1 billion. So now, the year previous, we would have 6.260 less 5.827. So that was a positive 0.433. Now, the change in net working capital is net working capital for the most recent period minus net working capital for the previous period. So what I would do now to get my delta net working capital, I would subtract those two. So that would be negative 1.074 minus 0.433, so that's negative 0.507. No, 1 point. Okay, 1 point. So in other words, this is a minus, and that's a negative 1.507 billion. Watch out for that. The minus the negatives can get you into trouble amazingly fast. So let me key this in, see what their cash flow, free cash flow. Negative 2.241. Posneg plus 1.636 minus 3.415 minus a negative is a plus 1.507. Free cash flow is a staggering $2.5 billion. That's the free cash flow. This isn't the only company. I choose different companies every semester to do this. And I've had some. This one doesn't surprise me at all. There have been some, and I like to do these without doing them first because I like to show you what my reactions are. I did a company last semester that I thought was a healthy company, and I ran the free cash flow on it, and the thing is dying. I mean, it was worse than this. It was like negative $3.3 billion negative cash flow. They had a positive income. And I mean, I didn't see that one coming at all. And I actually ran the numbers again because I thought I'd made a mistake. No. So sometimes these will really shock you. This one doesn't surprise me at all. Okay, now, the question here is, sir, you don't have enough to pay your bills. You got to pay your bills to stay alive. You don't pay your bills, they shut you down. So how is a company that is obviously bleeding all over the floor able to keep its doors open? How would you do that? If you didn't have enough to pay your bills, what would you do? Borrow. In other words, in order for a company like this to keep going, it has got to get money. One of the ways it can get money is by borrowing. In other words, by issuing debt instruments, bonds, notes, whatever. What's the other way that the company could get money to feed this ungodly maw? Yeah. Yahtzee. They can sell stock in the company. More owners. Let's bring in more owners. Yeah, this is a great company. Don't we all love Elon Musk? He's going to land on Mars. He's going to live there, he said. Thank God he's going to be off Earth. I should watch it. He has a very bad habit of calling people horrible names who criticize him. Then again, I have things, skill sets too, but we'll see. Here's the thing. There's got to be, and now this is where we begin to go into financial analysis. Look, numbers are, you've probably figured this out, that business in the 21st century, they're teaching you numbers, arithmetic, math, Excel, calculator, bring your calculator. Here's some numbers for you. Eat these numbers, chew them out, and put them in your report. Yeah, numbers are everything, except they're not. Always look at the numbers and turn them into the story. Don't ever take numbers as an answer for fundamental investing, fundamental anything. You know, I'll ask you, give me the numbers. But if you come to me in a higher level course, I'm going to say, you better get the numbers right, because the next thing you're going to do is tell me what those numbers mean. And that's a process that I begin here in this class. How did this company manage to keep its friggin' doors open? You look at the financial statement and you look at the numbers, and what did this company do? It sure as hell wasn't the revenue that saved this company. Something else. What do you see? Anything that would tell you how this company is staying alive? Okay, what did we say? Debt? There you go. You see it? What happened to their debt level in 1 year? You see it? What do you see? Tell me. What do you see? Went up almost $4 million. Billion. Billion. They borrowed that much money in 1 year to keep that dream alive, $4 billion. They literally almost doubled the leverage of the company in a single year because they bled so much cash. They borrowed to keep themselves alive. And if you look at the equity, you see that that went up by almost $1.5 billion. They sold stock. They bled $2.5 billion, and to cover their tracks, they borrowed close to $4 billion. They sold suckers another $1.5 billion in stock. You say, well, that's your cover. What happened to the rest of that money? Let's go up here. Didn't go into cash. Little went into inventory. Where in the heck did that money go? Oh, that was those capital expenditures. They borrowed money from lenders, they sold stock to equity investors, and they covered their bills, they paid their payroll, they did all that, and the rest of it, they just went on more of a buying spree. Hell, they probably went to Amazon.com to buy a factory for their Teslas. Now, can a company survive forever doing that? What is the one thing that a company has to do eventually and permanently in the long run in order to survive? No. Yes. You have to actually sell a product for more than it costs you. I know it's a radical concept, but sooner or later you actually have to have a product that sells at a rate and money and bringing more money through sales than you pay out in your expenses. And the more you go into debt, the longer it's going to take you to crawl out of that hole. Believe me, it took me 35 years to crawl out of all the debt. You will too, trust me. I hope you go into debt so hard that, well, you are already. I mean, how many years is it going to take you to pay off your student loans? Maybe, what, 50 years? Something like that. No, not that long. But the point there is that, look, they're bleeding cash year over year over year. They're keeping themselves alive by lending, by borrowing money, by selling stock, not by selling a product at a rate that would pay the bills. You have to borrow. Borrowing isn't a sin. It's, as a matter of fact, it's a critical component of a good company many times. Yeah, you sell stock sometimes. But when you have to do that to cover your tracks, $2.5 billion, and you borrow so much more than that just so you can go on more of a spending spree on your dreams, sooner or later, reality is going to hit. So, that's what I mean by the numbers only begin to inform you. At the end of the day, the numbers have to have an interpretation. And so, we tend to avoid investment recommendations. I mean, these guys are being supported. Tesla's being supported by fund managers on Wall Street. They went in heavy and long on this techie idea and other companies like that. They leaned in, they put in massive, massive amounts of money, and instead of cutting their losses, they are still leaning in further and further, supporting the stock price, because if they bail, they destroy their own portfolios because they've gone in so long, so heavy. It's similar to the whole story about, well, China's going to stop doing things for the United States. No, they're not. If they cut off their lending to the United States, all they do is send their own people's bank, their central bank, into hell. So they're married to us. And the same is true with the Wall Street fund managers and Tesla. They're married. They can't leave the relationship, but all what they can do is sucker people like you and me into the relationship to help them along with the day-to-day of paying for Elon Musk and his insanity, period. Okay? Now, no, I'm not opinionated. I'm right. Damn it. Now, And this part of the lecture, and I do it this way, there's a reason. I am going to bring online a very different company to show you ratio analysis. I'm going to bring up TGT. Now, what is TGT? What is it? Oh, Target. You people are educated. Target. Yeah, Target. Okay. Target Corporation. Target Corporation, a few years back, it spent a large amount of money. Technically, what we would call a buttload of money to upgrade all of its stores. They didn't really do a lot, but they did do a modernization. They put in a little grocery store in them. They rearranged things. A lot of it was just rearranging. But they were criticized heavily. Well, you spent all this money and hardly did anything. Well, actually, they did something that was intelligent for a long hauler like me. They don't want to end up being Sears or JCPenney or one of these stores. I walked into a Sears last year. It looked almost identical to the Sears that I walked into when I was a fat, pimple-faced 11-year-old boy. As a matter of fact, it still smelled like my mom in the store, for God's sake. And I mean, she said, it smells like my mom in this store when she was, younger. You see, the stores that don't keep with the generation are going to die eventually. And so when Target was criticized, you spent all this money to do these modernizations, and that was just stupid. No, that was long term. That was thinking for a longer period of time. And they did something else, too. They had traditionally been attached to a demographic cohort group in that was frozen time. You, madam. You, sir. Not you. No, but you see, the thing is that it was 18 to 30-year-olds, 18 to 25, 28-year-olds. You see, what they were doing was they were saying, oh, right, that's not enough. With a demographic of that age group that is declining with the years, we need to start tracking so that you don't stop going to Target when you're 30. You still go there. So in other words, they want to hold the cohort group, the 18 to 28, but they also want to make it so that you're still going there once you're past 28, once you're past 34. So that was something they think long term, a company like Target does. They are not in the business of flash. And like I said, can you name me the CEO of Target? You can't. You mean that person isn't out there showing off and living for his own ego? No. You understand? That is a long hauler company. That's not numbers. I'll show you the numbers, and I'll show you that the numbers confirm what I'm saying here. But this is what I mean when I say that numbers don't tell everything. We have to use numbers. Hell, everyone wants numbers. But behind the numbers are just a way of telling a story, and words are a good way of telling a story, too. And that's the other thing, too, is when I'm consulting for companies, and I talk to the people who are doing investment analysis, I'll see these people sitting there at the computers. Well, show me how you've done your analysis. And they'll show me, well, let me impress you with my Excel spreadsheets. Let me impress you with this formula that I developed. Let me impress you with this chart. Have you ever gotten off your fat ass and actually gone out and looked at the stores themselves? Have you ever actually talked to the employees, talked to the executive management, talked to the friggin' suppliers, talked to customers of this place? Have you ever done that? Well, no, I've got my computer here. What were you saying? And that's when I would just walk out the door and say, I'm done with you. See if I can find someone in your corporation that isn't a computer addict. Get off your ass. Look at a company. Yeah, the numbers are absolutely critical. Hell, I've got degrees in math and subjects that are very, very complicated. But that doesn't tell you the story. Now, let's look here. There's some reason this sucks. Where is Target's numbers? Let's try that again. TGT. Oh, summary. Oh, there we go. Okay. What informs you that this company is mature, that it is stable? Is there any number there that would be a good point to tell you about that? Anything? Oh, go.
The less than one beta.
Excellent. That beta is 0.85. That, in other words, is a company that is stable. The stock price movements relative to the market portfolio are only 85% of the market portfolios. So in other words, you have a stability in this company. That means that you're not going to make you should not expect high returns on investing, but you're also not going to expect to get your ass beaten by this company. Another thing, of course, is the EPS. This company is making $6 a share for its shareholders. That's a good sign. It doesn't mean, now the free cash flow, if I do the free cash flow, it's actually good. Now, a few years ago, it might not have been positive because they've done all that capital expenditure to revamp their stores, but it's recovered now. Net income is strong. Earnings per share is strong. The volume is nothing spectacular. I mean, that's about half of it. It's a quiet stock. It's not a sexy stock at all. And that's another thing you have to watch out for is when you see these investment programs, their job is to show you something exciting, something sexy, something awesome. Their job is not, well, this company has done hardly anything as far as crazy moves by its owner and all that. This is a stable, and this is a good place for me to begin. Just a quick analysis, and this is where we get into what's called ratio analysis. Now, tomorrow, actually, maybe tonight, what I'm going to do, I've got this, this will be in ReggieNet, so you don't have to write this down, okay? These are the ratios, some good ratios we use for analysis. Calculating these is not the end of the exercise. Make sure you understand that we are not done when we do this. Because then we have to ask ourselves, what do these tell us? What are the stories behind these numbers? Are these numbers that we should worry about? Well, one thing right off the bat is that these numbers should not be looked at in isolation. Because many of these ratios, from one industry to another, they can be quite different. So, for example, in a service-related industry, your net margin would generally be a lot higher than it is in an industrial company. So, in other words, you have to look at industry averages to really tell a lot about whether this ratio is bad or this ratio is good. Also, you need to know how to look at changes in ratios from over time. Excuse me. Now, the thing that comes next is to teach you some better Excel skills. So on Monday, if you have a laptop, bring it. You can have it open. I want you to learn what it means to really know Excel. Because I'm going to show you. Well, I already know Excel. Okay, here's what I hear. Here's what the big objective is. Actually, throughout the College of Business, this is kind of like the word has come down, and I've been preaching this gospel for more than a while now. Businesses want Excel skills, not equals A1 plus B1. When we say Excel skills, there are three large categories. One are the macros and the pivot tables. Those basic, you know how to write macros, and you know how to create and use pivot tables. The second is using big data. In other words, knowing how to find and capture big data from public networks and virtual private networks and bring it into your Excel spreadsheets for your purposes in that sheet. And then every time you open up the sheet, the data updates from the source so that you've always got current Excel calculations running. That's a big one. Big data. That's just so big. And the third one is a little bit subtler. And that's the one I'm going to show you a lot about here this evening. It's called the dashboard. The dashboard. And, okay, let me see if you've already know about it. Madam, do you know what I mean by the dashboard? Isn't that on the car, that thing that you don't want to hit when you stop real? Not that one. You know what I mean by the dashboard? Madam. Okay, watch. Well, let me explain. You see, when you use Excel, you're going to be probably a power user. You're going to be a creator of information products. Whether you're an accountant, a finance major, a marketing major, you are going to create information products for consumers. Different constituencies will use your production. You're going to create something that others will use. An accountant. The accountant doesn't sit there, well, this is pretty, I'll put this in the drawer after. No, that's distributed. That goes to the SEC. That goes into the annual report. That goes to labor unions. It goes to environmental groups. It goes to all these. Financial analysis. That's not for you. That's for your clients. That's for your family. That's for whomever. In marketing, you do marketing analysis because you're creating a product that you're going to try to sell to us finance people that will say, who might say, yes, we'll fund it. So you're creating information products. Now, the next thing, who should I talk to about this? I usually, okay, you, sir. Okay. Now, if you were to lift up your shirt, would I see your liver, your bowels, and your kidneys, and some other squicky things, like your heart and lungs? I wouldn't. Well, gee, that's kind of, that's rude of you. You're covering it up. Okay, when you get into your car tonight, madam, if I walked out there being really creepy and following you, you know why I'd be following it? Because I want to see the insides of your car engine. Are all those things showing? You know, the muffler, the valves, are all those right there where I can walk up and, oh, yeah, look at, oh, that is a damn fine fuel injection system you have there. Can I see that from the outside? No. Okay. You, sir, have a very high-quality stereo system. Now, if I were to walk in and look at it, would I see all the little electronic motherboards and all the wires going in? Okay. No, you wouldn't. It's all covered. An information product is just like any other product, any living thing. The skin covers what's really happening. A dashboard is the skin on an Excel spreadsheet. It is a front face that the end user see. It's informative, it's pretty, and it also keeps those people from seeing the guts of the machine. You see, you don't want some lower-level employee to see all of the math and the calculations and the tabs. For one thing, they probably don't want to see it. They'll freak if they see what you've done. And another thing is, you don't want them to touch that stuff back there. You want to keep that out of their sight, out of their way. When you print out a report for a board meeting, what you want to print out is an end product that you can give to the people at the meeting so that they can look at and see the numbers, see the summaries, but they don't see the insane math, the giant data structures, the equations. You want them to have a pretty product. If they want to ask questions, that's great, but we don't want them to see that right off the bat. This is a dashboard. And it's even more important. I mentioned something else there, security. You, generally speaking, the dashboard allows you to lock the back tabs. It also, you can lock the front end on the dashboard so that no one can change your formulas. No one can go in there and fiddle around and mess with it. My favorite example, and I probably already told it to you, but I'll tell it to you again. There's a company right here in town. It's a very big company. Not very well known, but I mean, it's a very successful, very powerful company. And in the Treasury Department, this has been more than a few years back, well, maybe about 3 years back, they were really in need of someone who would do some quantitative stuff. And on his resume, he bragged about all these Excel, mad Excel skills. And they had no reason to doubt him. He had good references. Turned out they were phony. But they set him loose on Excel. Now, when you walk into a company the first time, if you are a power user, you're going to see that whole thing. And you're going to say, You're going to say, what is this? That's Excel. 38 tabs wide, massive macros running, a pivot table from hell. Oh, whoa, this is, wow, okay. That's what you'll see. Well, he saw that, and he didn't know Jack S., and he started changing things, rewriting, making things easier for him to work with. Now, understand that this was one of those, and oftentimes when you go into companies, that Excel sheet wasn't written overnight. It's been building over years as multiple contributors built this company through the representations in Excel. You see that growth process, formulas, new additions of tabs in it. Well, he went in there and he just started changing things. And then he did the most horrible thing in the world. He saved it. You do understand why that's horrible. And then, before anyone saw what he had done, it had backed up and overwritten the previous backup. And, when they found out, they fired him right on the spot. But then they had to dig back into archives to a backup of a backup of a backup. And they found one, but of course it hadn't been updated in like a couple of years. So they had to rebuild everything from the past couple of years. That's why you lock your back sheets. You don't let some moron play with what you have done. Unless it's someone that you trust who has a higher level of authority than you do. And even then, sometimes you'll find that the people who are higher than you got there by means other than being geniuses. And you might, well, I don't know why that won't work for you. Huh, isn't that odd? Must be a glitch in Excel. I'll call Microsoft and tell Bill Gates what's wrong here. Sometimes you want to lock it from even people above you. But locking and dashboards are great at this because you can lock the back tabs, and on the front end where the final numbers are coming through, you can lock those down. So all people can do is look at them, and then sometimes in those dashboards, you'll have places where people can input numbers to get new results, but you are in control with a dashboard. So that's why, and I don't want to go on too much about it here, but watch. Now, a couple of things to caution you about. Like I said, oftentimes these Excel spread, rather, the way that they are presented to the SEC, it can be non-standard. Did I actually download that sheet? Did you see me click that? Oh, I'm clicking it now. Okay, here we go. Now, this is the full-blown, and as I showed you before, there are a ridiculous number of tabs with information. There are a couple of things you can do. I mean, sometimes I'll just delete tabs that I don't want. Other times I'll just hide them. I'm not going to do either here. I'm just going to live with what I've got here so I can get moving. Now, the first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to insert a worksheet. And I'm going to call that sheet Dashboard. Now, the next thing is that when you construct the dashboard, the last thing you do is to make it attractive. Don't use colors, because you're probably going to print. If you print a report, it's not going to be on a color printer. If you do have color printers, well, they're going to be pretty annoyed with you if you print off 50 for a big, big meeting in color. So make it neutrals, white as the background, and then shades, light shades of gray for emphasizing lines or columns. That's style. Put the style in at the end. Do the stuff like that. Don't waste time as you're going along. Years ago, I was a transcription and proofreading teacher. And the one thing we never wanted people to do, when you're transcribing, you're hearing something on a recorder, you're transcribing, don't make corrections as you're going along. Never, ever touch the stupid mouse, because you're just blowing your timing. And that's something you're going to see. When you run into the people in companies that have the really mad Excel skills, you'll see them hardly ever touching a mouse. Everything is finger commands, keyboard commands. And I'll show you some of that. But for us, you'll see me kind of doing both, because I'm lazy these days. Okay, so now, you just do the basic stuff to get yourself started. Ratio, 2017, 2016. Okay, now, watch how I do it. Just a few lines, and you can save yourself. Remember, there was a time when you didn't have Excel. Before Excel, there was a spreadsheet program called Lotus 1-2-3. Before Lotus 1-2-3, back in the early 80s, there was this beast called SuperCalc. Before that, we had something really, really weird. It was called pencil and paper. I know, right? Hard to believe. Yeah, I know. In my time, before that, we had the stone and the tool. Like, hell with you. Okay, watch. Look, I'm going to go to my sheet here now. Okay, and I'll just pull a couple of these. I'm going to do these things on top are called profitability ratios. Now, the first one is the gross margin. So I'll just type in gross margin. Now, professionals do not capitalize all the words in these. You'll capitalize the first word, and then the others will be in lowercase. This sounds like a trivial detail, but this separates you and your style from that of amateurs. I can see an amateur a mile away by these little stylistic defects. So now the gross margin. That will equal. Now, interestingly, many companies don't report their gross profit. Target does, but they inappropriately call it gross margin when it's actually gross income. But that's okay. Equals. Now, the next thing I'll do is I've got to find my stupid income statement. There it is. Am I on Target? Did I get Targets? Boy, that shocked the hell out of me. Now, let me do that over again. And I did that on purpose just to show you how easy it is to have an accident like this. Is there some reason why? Yeah, I've got Tesla up. It crashed Excel. Oh, seriously? Ugh. No, I didn't want to sign out. FML. Excel found a problem? Well, of course, I was doing Tesla. Fools. What do you mean? Don't tell me that. Yeah. There. Who's your daddy now? Okay. Well, FTS, I'll tell you what. Let's do this on Monday. Bring your computers with you so you can follow with me. That's all I have for you. I thank you.